Good morning. My name is Leslie Keller, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. At this time, I would like to welcome you to the conference call on the report on economic activity, public finances, and public debt as of the second quarter of 2021. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to make a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speakers. Cajeme Villarreal Camero, Chief Economist of the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, and Jose de Luna Martinez, Head of the Public Debt Unit of the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, to proceed with their remarks. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. I hope you're all doing okay. Thank you so much for joining us today in this conference. Francisco Arias from the Tax Revenues Unit is also here with us. We're all ready to answer all your questions. I want to talk to you first a little bit about how we are seeing in the economy and the public finances. During the second quarter of this year, we have seen an acceleration in growth in the world economy compared to the previous quarter, even though we have this third wave of infections going on in some countries. This is because of the vaccination, of course, the vaccination rollout is helping, is working as it should be. At the end of the second quarter, around 24% of the world population had received at least one dose of the vaccine. As of now, that figure is around 28%. Of course, we are seeing a heterogeneous recovery, also due to the vaccine rollout, the heterogeneity in this vaccine rollout. In advanced economies, around 75% of all the vaccines have been applied by the end of June. The numbers for the rest of the countries are, of course, much lower. Also in terms of population vaccinated in advanced economies, much higher than those in emerging economies or even less in lower income countries, where around 1%, maybe 2% of population in these countries have been vaccinated. This is going to be a challenge that we're going to have to work on over the next months and years probably. And because of this difference in access to vaccines, the IMF just very recently updated its estimations for its forecasts for growth for this year and for next year. The estimate for this year was actually unchanged, but there was a change in within regions, whereas growth in advanced economies was revised upwards to 5.6% this year, up by 0.5 percentage points from the previous estimate. For emerging markets and developing economies, the figure was revised down to 6.3%. That was a reduction of 0.4 percentage points. For 2022, the estimate was revised upwards by 0.5 percentage points to 4.9%. So it is estimated the recovery is ongoing, but as I was saying, this with divergent paths, and that's going to be a challenge in the next years. Just having such lower share of the population in some countries being vaccinated represents a risk in itself to the recovery for the whole world, right? Because it is an opportunity for new strands of the virus to appear and to continue posing risk of lockdowns, et cetera. But so far, that hasn't happened. Fortunately, what we are seeing are lower numbers. I'm going to talk a little bit lower numbers in terms of deaths and hospitalizations, for example. Let me tell you a little bit about what's happened here in Mexico. Here in Mexico, the administration of vaccines has accelerated as we have been receiving more vaccines as well. The latest data that we have is that around 51% of the adult population, those 18 years old and older, have received at least one dose of some vaccine. As you know, we acquire a very diversified portfolio since the end of last year and the beginning of this year, and that's been helping. Some of them are two dose, some of them one dose, but they are all being applied now and they are helping. We are seeing that in the figures I was saying. We're seeing it in other countries in the world, advanced economies and emerging, but definitely in Mexico, how in this third wave compared to the second wave, even though the number of cases might be accelerating and maybe even faster, that's not the same for other outcomes, health outcomes, such as hospitalizations, I was saying, intubations, ICUs, and of course deaths. What we are seeing in those cases are they are either moving at a slower pace compared to the second wave, or even diminishing, which is definitely well good news in the context. It's going to help also for the economy because these developments represent completely different policy measures. Whereas last year in April and May, as you know, we had to implement these pretty harsh lockdowns to contain spread of the virus. Now, because of this improvement allowed by the vaccines, the lockdowns do not have to be, they don't have to be so strict. And because of that, the Ministry of Health has reviewed the methodology that it uses for the epidemiological traffic light. So they are now weighing less the number of active infections and prioritizing hospitalization. So as I was saying, the new sanitary measures are less restrictive and allow for the continuation of economic and social activities. So for example, under the orange light in the previous methodology, non-essential activities such as going to the movies, theaters, museums, etc., were allowed at a maximum capacity of 25%. Now, under the new methodology, same orange light, the capacity has been increased to 50%. Considering this, the progress of vaccination, the revision of the epidemiological traffic light, we don't know foresee, as of now, generalized lockdowns that will have a considerable impact on economic activity. Of course, we cannot be sure with this new virus and the new strands that are appearing of what's going to happen in the future. But as of now, we think the vaccines are going to allow us to protect the population and allow us to continue economic activity. What are we seeing in terms of this economic activity in Mexico? Just a few hours ago, the INEGI released its flash estimate for the second quarter, as you know very well. The preliminary estimate of GDP growth stood at 1.5% quarter on quarter, seasonal adjusted, and 19.7% in annual terms, original figures. This number, the quarter on quarter, 1.5, is higher than the one we observed in the previous period of 0.8%, as you know, and it means that we have had now four consecutive quarters of growth and a faster recovery than the one we expected to the pre-pandemic levels. So as of now, for example, the second quarter GDP of this year is at 98% of the, close to 98% of the fourth quarter of 2019. Within the GDP estimate, what we saw was all sectors improved, grew. Primary sector grew 0.6%. Secondary sector grew 0.5% quarter on quarter. And very importantly, the tertiary sector, which is the one where we're going to expect to see the recovery in the following months, because it's the one also where the sectors within that, well, subsectors within that sector are lagging most behind, is the one that grew the most already, 2.1% this quarter. This is exactly what was expected because of the reopening of the economy allowed by the vaccination process, by the measures that we are all taking. So we think we're going to continue seeing this this progress in the following months, in the second half of the year. After, let me talk a little bit about the sectors themselves. The industrial sector, after it recovered pretty quickly in the second half of last year, has stabilized, which is not, I mean, in some sense natural given the supply restrictions also that we're seeing around the world because of different episodes we're seeing, bottlenecks, supply and demand mismatches, et cetera, which also explains part of what we're seeing in terms of inflation. I'll talk more about that later. In May, the industrial sector reached 97.4% of its pre-pandemic level, with some differences within the sector. So manufacturing was at close to 99% of its pre-pandemic level. Construction at close to 97% of its pre-pandemic level is the one that is lagging mostly behind. However, it showed a pretty good increase of 2% month-on-month in May this year. And mining is at 99.3% of its pre-pandemic level and has shown 2 months of consecutive growth. Now, as we were saying earlier, recovery has accelerated in the services sector. It already reached close to 100% of its pre-pandemic level. We saw 8 of 9 of the services subsectors showing positive monthly growth in May 2021. Wholesale and retail have fully recovered to levels of wholesale of 103.6% of its pre-pandemic level and retail at 101%. Pre-pandemic, I mean February 2020, by the way. Sorry I hadn't, if I hadn't been clear. What we saw in April and May was that the services sector was the fastest growing compared to the other ones. Services grew 2.6% compared to 1.8 for the total growth. So it has been helping actually the figure for the total. We saw recovery in all these sectors that are highly dependent on contact, such as accommodation and food preparation, which grew 14.5% in this bimester, April and May. It reached 72% of its pre-pandemic level. We saw a growth of 6.8% in transport, it's reaching 97.7% of its pre-pandemic level. Retail grew 4.2% also in this in April, May, reaching, as I was saying, 101% already. So just in general, the internal market is showing strength and is helping the recovery now, as was expected with the reopening of the economy. Private consumption, for example, the last data we have is for April, but it already reached 97.3% of its pre-pandemic level, and has grown 27% from the minimum that it reached in May last year. Gross fixed investment, also data for April, which is the last one available, reached 97.2% of pre-pandemic level, and it has grown 46% from the minimum that it reached in May last year. The external demand, of course, is also helping. And the value, for example, of non-oil goods exports and imports registered quarterly growths of 2.5% and 5.8% respectively, both seasonally adjusted. In the second quarter, manufacturing exports grew 2.5% quarter-on-quarter. Vehicles, for example, grew even higher, 2.9% in the second quarter versus the first quarter. We are also seeing improvements in terms of employment. 12.3 million of jobs out of the 13 million that were lost in April last year have been recovered already. there are still close to a little under 700,000 that have to be recovered during the rest of the year. All of them are women. So we believe that as these sectors that where women are overrepresented, such as accommodation that I was mentioning, and restaurants, bars, et cetera, retail, as they continue recovering, we should see an increase in jobs for women. And we see how, for example, between the second quarter and the first quarter, all of the jobs that were recovered, which amounted to 1.3 million, corresponded to the tertiary sector, all of them, social services, transport and communications, international organizations, government, commerce, et cetera, some other services such as museums, sports, entertainment in general, also showed an improvement in terms of jobs. So that's what we expect for the rest of the year. We are forecasting a full recovery probably by the end of this year, maybe 99%. Formal employment definitely recovering to 100%, and the formal sector maybe lagging a little bit behind. So I was saying we are seeing some of the supply and demand mismatches that we are seeing now, and supply bottlenecks as well, explain one, the difference in the recovery that we're seeing within sectors, but also the inflation pressures that we have been seeing for some months now. And this is something that we're seeing in all of the world. The increases in inflation are mostly explained by base effects. You see that pretty obviously in the energy goods, right? Such as propane gas, gasolines, et cetera. We're also seeing some temporary supply pressures stemming from weather factors, higher international prices for food, for raw materials, increased shipping prices. We're also seeing some increase even because of the higher mobility and the reopening of the economy, which is what you will expect to see. Such as increasing airfares, tourism-related services, food preparation, et cetera. The first half of July, the inflation reached 5.75% in annual terms. However, around 75% of that inflation can be explained by only 15 items. Generics, as they are called here. So, for example, as I was saying, gas, domestic gas, the one we used to cook, gasoline, corn tortilla, chicken, beef, automobiles, restaurants, tomato, air transport are some of those that explain most of it, and they are related to these mismatches, bottlenecks, and other transitory pressures that I was mentioning. Out of the 299 generics that are considered in the Price Consumer Index measure, around 117, which have a combined weight of 44% in the index, had inflation rates that were below the upper limit of the central bank's inflation range of 4%, 117 out of the 299. And actually 83, showed inflation rates that were lower than 3% during the first half of July. So, of course, it will depend. We all think these pressures are going to be temporary. We don't know how exactly long does temporary mean, but we'll all keep an eye on them and be looking forward to the measures taken by the central banks. Major central banks are not expected to take any significant measures over the next months and even until the end of 22, but something that remains to be seen. In any case, inflation expectations remain well anchored within the pretty close to the Banco de Mexico's objective and within its range, the variability range, So according to the latest survey, the expectation was of medium-term general inflation expectations of 3.55%. We have also seen in the second quarter of this year an easing of financial indicators after all the volatility that we observed in the first quarter. So the peso, for example, appreciated 2.5% quarter-on-quarter against the U.S. dollar. The sovereign risk premium declined 21 basis points. The five-year CDS declined 21 basis points quarter-on-quarter. And the Mexican stock market advanced 6.5% quarter-on-quarter. As of 28 July, it was 7.7%. We are seeing lower volatility. Further bouts of elevated volatility cannot be discarded, related to the evolution of the COVID-19 pandemic, of course, and the expectations of what the Fed might do in the future. We saw some change in language in the last meeting of the FOMC, although it seems they're saying they have to see more data. As we know, they are looking at employment recovery with caution, and not only the total number, but also number for certain groups such as African Americans, other minorities, etc. And they are their recovery numbers in terms of jobs are lower than those for other groups. So they are probably going to still wait and see what the data says. In any case, we're well positioned in terms of buffers, as you know, international reserves of $193.2 billion. We have access to the IMF flexible credit line for $63.3 billion. The swap lines with the U.S. Treasury and the Fed, which amount to $69 billion. So altogether are close to $326 billion. Now, let me talk to you a little bit about public finances for the second quarter. We saw at the end of June, public sector revenues were 98.3 billion pesos above the program, or 7.3% higher in real terms compared to the first half of 2020. In line with the economic recovery, and the better oil prices and other items as well. I'll explain to you a little bit more. Tax revenues, for example, were 5.2 billion above the program. But if you exclude the revenues that come from fuels, the excise tax on fuels, tax revenues were close to 43 billion above the program, or higher in 2.4% in real terms compared to the first half of 2020. This is in line with the economic recovery and the strengthening of the tax framework to maximize collection that we have talked in past conferences. The federal government's oil revenues were higher by 7.1 billion pesos, compared to the program, and close to 34% higher in real terms compared to the first half of last year. This is even including the reduction, as you know, reduction in the DUC, the Derecho de Utilidad Compartida, that the fiscal relief that we gave, the tax relief that we gave Pemex some months ago. It's because of the increase in oil prices mainly. Non-tax revenues of the public sector were higher by 141.5 billion pesos compared to the program, and higher by 19.4% in real terms compared to the first half of last year. This is most explained by higher revenues coming from duties, 27.7 billion pesos above the program. As you know, there are some duties that are set to zero in the federal revenues law because they have a specific purpose that is mandated by some laws or some regulation. As they generate, they have a specific line of spending already. where they go. So that explains the, usually some of these higher than expected revenues coming from duties. We also saw higher revenues coming from the aprovechamientos by 115.5 billion pesos. And some of them also are because of revenues that generate ministries or some other entities and that have some specific source of, some specific spending purpose. But also, as we talked yesterday in the conference for the report with the Undersecretary Llorio, some of them explained by our use of funds and trusts by 41.5 billion pesos. The health fund, for example, we mentioned, we said last year that we're going to use part of one of the health funds to continue fighting the COVID pandemic. We used 33 billion pesos. We were going to use only 22 in the first half, but we decided to use all 33 billion pesos that we programmed last year. So that explains part of the higher revenues. Also, the Fonden, the Trust Fund for Natural Disasters, was extinguished, as you know very well, and so 25.4 billion pesos were registered as revenues. All of them have to be used for the purposes, for previous liabilities that Fonden has and other purposes, so it's not going to be used for other spending. Also, from some trust funds that the CONACYT had that were not being, most of them used in energy and other in other specific areas, 50.9 billion pesos came from there. Some other operations also explain part of those non-tax, higher non-tax revenues. In expenditure, the total expenditure reached 3.2 trillion pesos, sorry, higher by 17 billion pesos than the program and higher in 4.1% in real terms compared to the first half of last year. There are differences within the total, of course. Programmable expenditure, sorry, was higher than the program by 58.9, 0.7 billion pesos and 7.7% higher in, compared to last year. We are devoting more resources to fight the pandemic, so we see an increase, for example, in the Ministry of Health expenditure by close to 9 billion pesos. This is an increase of 12.3% in real terms versus the last year. Also, in other functions, economic development, social development, which increased 14.5% and 5.8% in real terms compared to the first half of last year. On the other hand, non-programmable expenditure decreased close to 42 billion pesos compared to the program because of lower ADEFAs, lower payments related to last year expenditures. Undersecretary Rodriguez explained it yesterday because of the planning and the programming of spending last year, we were able to push forward these ADEFAs that we thought were these payments we thought we're going to make this year, and it's going to help for expenditure related to the pandemic in this year. And financial cost is also showing lower figures than the ones we expected. So financial cost is actually, as of June, 24 billion pesos below the program. The public deficit, in terms of deficit and debt, the public deficit was 231.2 billion pesos, which is better by 111.5 billion pesos than was expected. This is explained by the 98 billion pesos in additional revenues, mostly explained by the 98 billion pesos in additional revenues of the public sector that I was mentioning just recently. And then also because of non-budgetary additional better balance. The PSBR amounted to 397 billion pesos, and the historical balance of the PSBR stood at 47.9 billion pesos because of the higher, pretty much because of the recovery in the economic activity, the higher GDP. and also because of a lower exchange rate. I wanted to end my my part with talk to you a little bit about some estimates for year-end 2021 that we presented in the report. We are estimating now PSBRs of 4% of GDP by the end of this year, compared to the 3.4% that we expected in the beginning. And it is mostly because of inflation, the higher inflation that we are seeing that we expected by the end of the year, and also which we register in the PSBRs, and also because of the use of financial assets that we already mentioned and that we are incorporating in our estimates. And we are also estimating the historical balance of the PSBR to go down from the 52.4 that we saw at the end of last year to 50.8 at the end of this year because of higher economic activity, as I was mentioning, which more than compensates this effect of the PSBR and some other effects. I'm going to turn over now to my colleague, Jose Luna, for some remarks on debt. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much, Cajeme, and good morning to everyone. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to comment on the main actions regarding public debt management during the second quarter of 2021. The objective of managing public debt in a responsible, transparent, and efficient manner remains a priority for the federal government. Also, important objectives of the Public Debt Management Office are to extend the maturity profile of debt, mitigate the refinancing risk, and reduce the financial cost of the portfolio over the following years. Let me now summarize the main actions regarding the domestic and foreign debt management contained in the report. Regarding domestic debt, during the second quarter of the current year, I would like to highlight that we are on track in terms of executing our annual financing plan for 2021, as announced in December last year. We continue to conduct our bond weekly auctions, as announced every quarter. On June 21st, the Ministry of Finance completed a liability management operations in the local market, exchanging government securities with institutional investors. The operation consisted of two steps. First, the federal government purchased M-bonds and UDI bonos with maturities between 2021 and 2025 for a total amount of 20.8 billion pesos. Second, we sold a basket of government securities with maturities between 2023 and 2050 for 20.8 billion pesos. The total demand for this operation was 1.5 times the issued amount. It's important to note that this operation did not cause any additional indebtedness for the federal government. Now, with regard to the foreign debt, Mexico continued its efforts to diversify its funding sources and broaden its investors' base. We keep monitoring the international financial markets to look for the best opportunities to improve the profile of our debt portfolio. On April 7th, the federal government completed a refinancing operation for an amount of $3.25 billion, reducing in 69% the amortization schedule for the year 2023. The operation consisted of three steps. First, the federal government issued a new 20-year reference bond for an amount of $2.5 billion at a coupon rate of 4.28%. Second, the amount raised was entirely used to reduce in 69% the external debt market amortizations for the year 2023. Third, investors with bonds that have a maturity on 2023 and 2040 were allowed to exchange them for the new instrument. Furthermore, the total amount of the exchange and refinancing transaction reached $3.25 billion. There were 246 international investors with a demand of 2.3 times larger than the issued amount. It's important to highlight two main aspects. First, the transaction allowed the extension of the maturity profile of our debt. And second, the operation did not cause any additional indebtedness for the federal government. Additionally, and even though this operation falls out the published period, it's important to mention that on July 6th, the federal government issued the second bond linked to the Sustainable Development Goals framework. The new bond was issued for a 15-year maturity for a total amount of 1.25 billion euros. The bond had the lowest coupon in the euro market with this maturity, with a coupon rate of 2.25%. The operation had a demand 2.6 times larger than the issued amount, with 154 international investors. The operation allowed the expansion of the investor base. It also served as a reference for private and public corporates in order for them to execute sustainable financing at the lowest possible cost, and to promote the SDG as a tool to elaborate a sustainable financial policy. I would like to highlight that Mexico plans to be a recurrent issuer of this type of bonds. We plan to issue this type of bonds in multiple currencies in the future. We are committed to creating an ecosystem of SDG bonds. We aim to mobilize private capital into our main social programs. And also, we are committed to reporting to investors how we use their money and what is ultimately the developmental impact of the federal government programs. Both the local and foreign market operations follow the fundamental federal government objectives to reduce the refinancing risk at the lowest possible cost and to improve the maturity profile of the federal government debt. In the second quarter of 2021, the historical balance of the public sector borrowing requirements, which are our broader definition of debt, stood at 47.9% of GDP, which is 4.4 percentage points below than the observed level at the end of the year 2020. As announced earlier, the federal government is committed to maintain debt levels in a descending path in the following years. I would like to highlight that Mexico maintains access to financial markets in very good conditions. Recently, all the international rating agencies have confirmed their credit ratings on the federal government debt. This is important because it confirms the strong creditworthiness of the federal government in international markets. In the second quarter of 2021, the federal government's debt portfolio showed strong sound risk indicators. The currency risk remains low for the federal government debt, with 77.3% of net debt being denominated in Mexican pesos and only 22.7% denominated in foreign currencies. Additionally, the refinancing risk also remains low. The average maturity of foreign market debt is 21.6 years, and the average maturity of domestic market debt is 7.4 years. Finally, the interest rate risk remains limited, with 81% of domestic market debt held at long term and at fixed nominal and real interest rates, while 100% of the external market debt is denominated at fixed interest rates. Thank you for your attention, and we will now proceed to the questions and answers.